And welcome to Trippy Politics, Protests, and
Potpourri.
I'm your host, Corey Elliott, and as always, my co-host,
Leslie McLam.
Howdy, folks. So we are here today. We have a special guest in. It's actually a, what would we call this? A recap of this last one? A catch-up? Well, I don't know what exactly it's called, but we have
a check-in.
Jump in. Yes. So go ahead and introduce yourself.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Corey.
And of course, me, Lizzie over here hiding in the corner.
And Lizzie.
Leslie is
doing
the recording in the backside. Sorry, I'm not on that other side of the computer with y'all.
No, but I really appreciate, us being able to catch up. And Corey and I bumped into each other in person about a week ago. So, I would say this is a follow-up, and there's just, so much that has transpired in 3 years from what y'all brought me on, and I really appreciate that because that got me some street creds out here.
Well, you gave us a chance to talk about all sorts of things. I think we were talking about, hostel architecture, urban planning.
Yeah.
And there were some research and some things that you were following up on that you were telling us about.
Yeah.
So I wonder what has happened since. We've had a pandemic.
I know.
We haven't been in the KBOO studios for a few years. And this is our first episode inside the KBOO studio in downtown Portland. And thank you so much.
You're welcome. I'm happy to be here. Yeah, just I don't know if we want to have a casual conversation.
Oh, yeah, no, Def. I just kind of wanted to revisit exactly what you've been doing since the last time we talked. I mean, we got through the pandemic. Oh, my God. Yeah, that thing.
I think we won't. And at this point in our journey, we've been through it. We've experienced. And that's our conversation, right? Either start off the pandemic and how much of that I think that we prior to that. In the direction that we were advocating for and in the street for social justice and racial justice and all of these things really got a real chance to be exposed of how crazy and effed up the system really is, right? Which is what led me to the whole initiative around a housing, just tapping into, like you said, urban planning and the displacement, gentrification, conversations that I was occupying and learning, but actually was able to take some action with that. So I think at the time, maybe Portland State University is where I was not going to take classes, but was a part of a studio for students around alternative housing and alternative housing solutions. And I had this, idea or concept or thought that as I was working with Urban League and as a housing caseworker, recognizing that a lot of Black folks and Black women and formerly incarcerated folks, but centering women, we're having a lot of challenges with just being able to apply for apartment or, just all the stuff with the background. So as I was just navigating all that, Ibrahim and Right to Dream and Right to Survive was very much of a point of where I was able to exercise what it was that I was learning, but also be able to learn more from those folks that had, had been paving the way for someone like myself to come along.
Nice. So, when we talked last, you were just getting this off the ground. You were just getting everything conceptualized and getting rolling with the ball. And you've honestly, in my opinion, kicked butt over the last 3 years.
Thank you.
So, where are you guys right now? What are you guys doing on the ground? What are you guys doing organization-wise?
Yeah, so at the time, it was literally just me running around the city trying to gather resources for people, thinking about, and, not so much Afro Villages, at this point, we say that we're just not a place, we're a movement. And so for me, as we, experience as activists and organizers, there's that place of for myself to be able to reset, and have a place to heal or come be with like-minded people so that we actually could, formulate our thoughts in a more cohesive way. And, pandemic, 2020, happened and we were locked down. Our governor said, stay at home and save lives, right? Also, she said, at that moment for us to shelter in place. So folks did that without, you know, meaning like unhoused folks, house folks, housing insecure. Like, what does this mean? Thinking that, hey, it may be like one of our like winter crazy storms. We'll be inside for two to 14 days and we'll all be free. Well, like, we all know that that just wasn't the case. It just kept escalating and escalating, you know, and those folks who were out on the, you know, in transition were affected the most because everything was shut down, especially in Old Town, and where services, where people often would come and we didn't know really what to do, you know. So, and I think for me, the prior to that had been like a real focus and key on emergency preparedness for Black folks. So I was also having those conversations, putting together wellness kits and emergency preparedness kits. And those are some of the, you know, they say stay ready so you don't have to get ready. So yeah. I was able to be a resource, you know, in that moment for those particular things, the smaller things. Yeah. I'll share more.
I mean, you know, we also had during 2020 the protests of, after the killing of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and multiple other individuals. The list is actually so extensive that it's deeply depressing.
Yes.
But yeah.
I think the list is still growing in many ways.
Yeah.
I've heard some new headlines on a few of the major stories, of course.
But the way that we responded locally, I think that we respond in these almost 10 years that I've been back in Portland, or I would say just really, you know, Portland is my home. I care for Portland. I also describe Portland as a person or a thing. It's just like, we're like Portland, Portland, Portland. But it's how we are able to like, in urge and out of crisis, come together. And so that's what we demonstrated to the whole entire like world, right? That we centered, it was like George, may he rest in peace. That did not happen in Portland, but it felt like it did.
Yep.
And so because of the previous, you know, in our movement, we were just so activated. And so folks came from all over. I remember, and I'm sure y'all may have gotten calls from other family or friends, like what's as it grew, right? That I remember the day May 25th. So we had been in, you know, lockdown for a little over a month. And so that was like, I went down to City Hall because that call to action. So, you know, where I got my mask on, it was crazy. So I went with my sign, it was in my window, and I was so mad, you guys. I was just like everyone else. But I also had been cleansing, and meaning like, yo, this pandemic, it was like, I went on a 40-day fast. So by that time, I was on a different level in my mind. And it was being upset, but it also was like, it was more spiritual for me than it was, you know, that frustration. So I went in peace. Right. I wanted to like be in a peaceful, like, how can this be peaceful? And it got chaotic very quickly. I think it was, I was there during the day. And then by the sunset, it was already, it was on and popping.
George's death was on the 25th. And the reaction here in Portland actually built up. The night you're describing, I believe, is the 29th. When the fires were lit at the front of the MCDC. And I was standing front lines. I ate tear gas. That was fun.
Yeah.
That was the first time I ate tear gas.
Yeah, it was crazy.
I am not a fan of tear gas or pepper gas or any sort of chemical irritant. That is not a good thing to be putting in an urban landscape, I think. I heard a lot of complaints from people that lived in the downtown area and around Lombard and around a few of the police precincts that had protests going on where those were used, the irritants went into private homes and they would affect people that, you know, they'd already left the protest earlier in the day or they didn't participate or it just wasn't something that was supposed to be affecting them, but it was.
But then
it's going down storm drains. Mm-hmm. And I think there was even some testing
done. There was a study recently. It was out of Britain, I believe it was. It was an organization that they checked the levels and whatnot, and supposedly PPB dumped 2,200 per times the lethal amount of... Yeah. It was so to a about, degree that
yeah.
It was
so
stupid.
Think about that going down into the storm drains, into the watershed, and you know what we use to sustain life here in the city of Portland.
Yeah. And I want to rewind before, like, you know, within that period of time. So we're talking about like the housing crisis that we were already in from 20 when former mayor Charlie Hales had announced it, that we were in a housing crisis. Right. I moved to Portland in 2014, winter 2014. And so just getting acclimated, like, with my surroundings. And I also had, like, I may have shared this before, that I had received housing, or how I entered into housing, as I got help and support through Transitional Project, because I was new coming back to Portland and I had stayed with family, but I had lived here before, but everything had changed. So I wasn't at the time seeking an opportunity to get rental support, but that was available. So I'm pretty much grateful for that start. And then at that, at the moment of, like, you know, where we, the COVID-19 and social distancing and 6 feet and all the things that just, like, was just, like, put on us so quickly that we were not prepared for. So
the face masks. I wasn't prepared for the face masks.
Yeah.
It took me forever to remember to wear a face mask.
Yeah, right? But a part of my emergency preparedness kit was something of that nature, because what I was anticipating or could possibly happen here was an earthquake. You know, so I had a hard hat, I had safety glasses, I had, like, reached out to. So we had had some of those meetings and had some of those things happening. But being able to, so the major thing was, right, water.
Yep.
Washing your hands.
Yep.
Clean water is one of the most important elements for sustaining life.
Absolutely. We come to this planet, if we were born in this format, in water. And so when folks weren't able to wash their hands, they're out on the street. So that initiative, or that entry from Portland State around alternative solutions or housing modalities, I was able to, like, yeah, I had these boards from that particular, like, studio that I got from Todd and Marisa and the Homeless Action Collaborative folks. And when my friend Nicole at Floyd's shared with me, yo, Q, there's people that are, when she said people, I didn't know what she really meant. So I don't live too far. I come in, there was like one tent that was already starting to, like, was on the sidewalk across the street from Floyd's. Some guy, we would say Debo'd this other guy out of, they were all standing in this one tent. And that just wasn't like, right. So I thought, no supplies or anything like that. So me and Nicole start brainstorming. She knew I was having meetings at the coffee shop on a regular basis around housing. I'd already been having these conversations. I put out a sound. I actually, Donald Trump, when they fucking sent out the, excuse my language, when we got those first stimulus checks, that is what I used my stimulus check. I bought supplies. And I went to Fred Meyer's and I bought as many tents and sleeping bags and chairs that I could. And I went and set up shop on Cooch Street.
Nice. Now that is giving back right there. Giving back to people.
Yeah. That was the start. So that was like that around that time. So by June we had an exhibit with all these boards, and that became my hub. People were bringing supplies down for me. I raised about $7,000 in a weekend from all, because I was already doing this. Every time I went shopping or purchased something, I would let people know, and people were just donating to the cause.
Right.
And all of that money went back to the community. And I rented a couple hotel spaces for some elders, I was like, I don't know how all these people came, mostly men from different backgrounds and different spaces. Some were formerly incarcerated, or just like, it was like, Corey, literally, like, if folks were being bussed in. And come to find out, a little bit of that was happening.
I mean, here at KBOO, we have the school-to-prison pipeline, mm-hmm. but it really needs to be expanded to the school-to-prison-to-streets pipeline.
Yes.
It's a very interesting program that if someone wants to check it out, I think they can find that program on KBOO's website, kboo.fm.
Very, very informative. And yes, no, the situation is going from schools right into the prisons. And then from there, we have people that are getting released out onto the street, and because they have such a record from whatever it is in their past, they can't get rented into places, apartments. I mean, not to mention, you can't even find an apartment at $400,000 anymore.
And this is just something that got worsened by the pandemic, is what you're saying saw.
Yeah, and also, like, because the shelters and places where folks could be able to, like, go, everything was just a backlog, so no one knew what to do. And some folks who were coming out of prison may have gone through Central City Concern, because like that's a place where, so folks who, depending on their situation, and this is what I was saying when Nicole said there's people, what she really meant was there was Black people. And that's the first set of folks that I seen that I had not seen in a long time. Another thing that was happening in the very beginning of the pandemic is a sound off by Kaya with Street Roots, and that's how the CP3 camps formulated. Because I was a part of that conversation. Former Commissioner Joanne Hardesty was there. They were trying to figure it out. Prosper had some. It was a lot of phone calls happening. There was a lot of urgency, and the point of those, not at the time villages, but those spaces becoming available so that people who were on the streets would have a place to go and be sheltered in place in a safe environment. Well, it, by so many people getting all involved, it shifted from like 25 folks to end up being like 45 folks, designers and all sorts of folks getting involved. It was like a very, like, I would think, reflecting back of like how Vanport was set up in 180 days because the people did not have a place to go.
And one thing I remember, the villages over there too, and covering the protests, somebody labeled them at one point Antifa HQ.
I remember that when we were walking down near the waterfront area.
The one that was downtown across, which now the Greyhound bus station had closed down. And then what was across the street was the open parking lot there, which Prosper, I think that's labeled as like Block 26. So that was supposed to be the BIPOC, which it is, but they called me, Q, wanted me to, and I was like, I was interested at first, but my vision of what was not that.
You they called you because of your work with the Afro Village, which we talked to you about last time.
Yes. Right. Bringing the Afro Village, which was just like getting through like a phase of like exploration and research. And so by my experience, so like I left that conversation, not because it wasn't the right conversation. I was at the point of being like, I want to get together with Black organizers in our city and our community that have the same interests of housing, which was very hard to find folks to come together. And because we were shelter in place. So I was just downtown. And then people knew that I was downtown. I was blessed to have a space, and I just started what I could to just bring light to the alternative of what can happen. So with that,
and how did it feel for you being downtown, like with the change in infrastructure and services and businesses when COVID happened, and you just trying to get things done from your end?
Yeah. Well, it was like very lonely, because the businesses, so the property, we say people over property, right? But these property management companies, these large family entities own. So folks, you know, they have not really abandoned at the beginning. It was like, oh, we got to stay at home because we have buildings that no one really knew what was in these buildings. Mysterious around in Old Town. What I can say, the folks who were mostly community friendly, like Nicole and Floyd's, was like, and Angelina, who was next door, we're still trying to stay at afloat, you know, in the beginning, because it was still fresh. But as we started to move closer into the months of like May and then our summer, it got pretty bad. Because by that time, there's protesting, people are outside, you know, like it was.
How are the, like the bathrooms or water fountains that we have downtown in Portland? What was there an effect to?
Oh, yeah, very much so. So when I say with this check, I called around, and this was already a thought that I had about porta potties. And so it was so hard, you guys, to get a porta potty to be downtown because people had them on their farm that they couldn't afford. So I'm calling around. I actually found a company that would come and rent to me, but I promised them, the promise is that I wouldn't let it get destroyed. And I have a picture of me when it got dropped off at Floyd's on the outside. So my agreement with Nicole was that if we could get this porta potty, would you be okay? Like if I can find one, would you be okay with it? I actually was in the process of like thinking, because there's some that they don't use anymore. I was trying to buy some.
Yeah.
So that they would be, not knowing that there was a city plan, this whole city plan from 2017. That's what months later, we had already had the data.
Are you talking about the red ones, the red potties that showed up in certain key areas like North Portland and up near Foster area?
So that
area?
Was a little bit, because I put the first one in Old Town. Then they start, we need porta potties.
Yeah.
So then folks had access to it. So my agreement with the guys that were on the street that was camping in place is that they took care of it. It was going good. I got a locker. I bought a locker and it was on Floyd's patio, you know, set up pop-up shower, like a whole thing. Cause this was from the study of like, I call that Old Town Fresh.
Yeah.
So that Old Town Fresh ended up by midsummer in this competition to reuse a Max train. And it's a whole big like story, but all of these things of my, you know, my advocacy started to become an action-oriented place, because I was looking at this from just seeing and talking to the women on the streets and just folk, the few folks that we knew that we had a relationship with. Out of nowhere, by July, I couldn't even make out half of the people who were down now in Old Town because I didn't know who they were. And it started to be, you know, again.
Is that because there were so many more new ones, or because there was a complete like turnover and change of people?
It was a complete turnover and change of people. Hmm. And those folks brought some definite like different energy than the folks that were from Portland or been here. I mean, we definitely were seeing folks that I was talking to were just landing. And I'm like, what's bringing you to Portland? If it wasn't the protests, it was all the national things. A lot of people don't want to talk about this. I shared this with another person that interviewed me during the pandemic out of my apartment over Zoom.
It is a difficult one because mm-hmm. like a lot of conservatives try and state that all the homeless are coming to Portland and they are all out of state or whatnot. But, you know, there is a good portion that of people that are migrating to Portland because mm-hmm. of the services, because of, you know, various other reasons. And it's gotten to a point, like, this wasn't a new thing from the pandemic. This was happening before as well. There were lesser numbers of individuals doing so.
But you're saying, so, like, it just became more visible.
Just became more visible.
Yeah. It became very...
Might I suggest say the word broken windows policing on this one?
Yeah.
Is that appropriate?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it sounds
so,
like.
So, yeah, with that, so I met a person right before the name Marta Patini, who was working with the A-Track that was offered to me to help support. So before a lot of this happened, we were just talking about, you know, how to design or what spaces were available for Afro Village. Because it was still the concept. All with all this is like, how can I get the place for the placemaking? So through that competition or that challenge, some folks from the city and a couple other people who sort of was organizing that asked how could they help support Afro Village without, like, it was just a project, just a theme name around some things that I had been doing. And then it became very popular by through articles. So we applied for Metro funding. We got $20,000 for placemaking. We had a really decent proposal, a good proposal to get $20,000 because it was about up to $25,000, and they didn't have a lot of people that they that had applied and received it. And then tracking Portland Clean Energy Fund, because this was to reuse something. So the way that there's 27 of the first generation of TriMet trains or MAX trains are coming off the tracks within the next year. And those are all the old ones that you walk up the stairs. So those are called type ones, or they're known as type ones. And because their life is going away, and they don't have all the parts or the mechanics and all of the logistics over these years, it's like, hey, we're going to put them to rest. So some designer from the design community, and you know, small, I happen to be engaged with that, or I would have never known. So Marta and I, who is a lovely, amazing woman from Italy, who had been working, she had been on a student research visa working at the university, and we just hit it off really well. And so she really got what it was that I was saying. So my graphics, my logo, she worked on the logo. So I had a name, but I didn't have a presence. And so she created a logo. She created a bunch of like aesthetics of logos from my direction of like culturally and what I wanted to look like. And we went with one with the particular color and the theme of this African symbol that means harmony and strength, or humanity and humility and strength. The Adinkra symbol that sits on the Afro village look like four. So that's what that means. And it has hands with like, look like houses, but could be resources and just uplifting the community. So like we worked on that together. And then from my mutual response in Old Town, those sort of things, she started following me on Facebook and I was always posting. So she was noticing, recognizing what I was doing. And so when this for the train, that's what we sort of like, I mean, illustrated food, hygiene, and therapy. Like, and those were the same things that people were in need of at that moment. And so that became very popular. And so we applied that fall for the Portland Clean Energy Fund, which went towards that. And by April of 2021, we were awarded $98,000 for a planning grant, the first round, and we got the highest score.
Nice.
So that kicked off Afro Village. We had a website by the end of 2020, and we just continue to keep growing since then, up until, like I mentioned, 2022, applying for the Oregon Health Authority funds for the tobacco taxes, which allowed a $49,000 funding to come through without us being a nonprofit. We partnered with a fiscal sponsor. So City Repair was our first fiscal sponsor because we had a relationship with the homie Kirk Rhea, who I love, who's been working with me for a very long time. So he was going with me to all these meetings, and just the energy was just like formulating and coming together because I just did my best to stay positive and do what I, without having money. Like, I didn't have a job. This became like, yeah,
your job.
A sacrifice.
It became your job.
It became my job. Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like you were spending maybe nearly full-time hours working on these various projects, first the Afro Village and then the train.
Yeah.
So what happened with the train? How did that come to fruition? So, did people get to move in? Is it real? Where can we
learn more? Yeah, so the train right now, so we have a website. Our website is afrovillagepdx.org. We also have an Instagram page and a Facebook page. So I'm either sharing, but with the train, it's very unique because what we wrote the first proposal for was a space in Northeast Portland that ended up not being... You know, these trains are big. Yeah. So the working with a staff member at Home Ford, I think very intentionally well, but that particular, being in the pandemic, it was kind of hard to, it wasn't kind of, it was hard to still get people, like there was no meeting in person. And what was offered to us was an apartment complex that had a underutilized parking lot, which was Dawson Park Apartments in Northeast Portland, because that was the centering of what the work that I was focusing on through the Albina Vision Trust plan that was starting to evolve around how the displacement happened and dispersed of the African American community from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. So that ended up like not happening because we couldn't get the property manager. It was just, it was like, yes, the meaningful thing to do, but then like the folks ghosted us. So we didn't hear from the staff person at all. So like the next step was, me and Martha was asked to be interviewed by some folks. We had a snowstorm happened in February. It was rescheduled. These folks from, an article was done on us through, I think, Portland Mercury.
Okay.
And so this folks was like looking for architect or some stories and landed on ours and thought it was very unique because Martha's the architect. I'm the activist and like how we were able to collaborate our mission and our goals to like get this illustration or like what could be possible with these trains. And folks just thought it was the coolest thing. There was 9 other entries to the competition, the challenge they called it, but we were just like more of a focus because we had won this challenge of like a voting thing. But the other designs were fairly good and could have done anything for the city. The problem was TriMet was not invested. So that's why the folks encouraged and not for any reason. They were just going to go to the landfill. So that was the folks' point. Like, hey, these should not, from pure plan of sustainability standpoint, these should not go to the landfill, or at least all of them. Let's see what we can do with them because there's a connection here.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point you bring up, is that what do we do with these old pieces of public transportation? And I think your idea of remaking it, it seems quite intriguing.
Yeah.
Rather than having it go to a landfill, it feels like a better use to turn it into something that gives back to the community one more time.
One more time.
Right? And maybe there's, I don't know, maybe there's a tax benefit or something from donating it to a group or some way that it can provide value to the city as well again. Yeah,
but it being so new and with so many things happening, you know, it's kind of like it's gone under the radar, but we've kept breathing life into the project. And so land, you know, talking about property and land, that was, so we created a presentation of like all the work leading up to that. So with Metro, which is on our website, we have a YouTube channel that we don't often post on, but one of the videos is on our website. And that was me. I wasn't even in Portland. It was over Zoom. And we made this video that got submitted to Metro. And that is also like what helped us be awarded that first $20,000, which was just to like, you know, a little bit of time, see what we can do. I really enjoyed working with those students. And I tracked a few of those students down from Portland State, Mariah Iverson, for one, and later on came on board to be a part of the project because she was a part of one of the students that illustrated very well of my vision for the Afro Village.
Right.
So it was great. And it would, so like, to answer the question of where, there's still nowhere, right? Because the city, all the politics, not enough money and investment in something like this. So we've had to carry it on. We, with that money and that funding, we activated a plaza. So now during the pandemic, remember, like Healthy Street Initiative came out. So we were able to create a community experience with the mock-up of what the train could be in the community on 10th and Davis, and our partners became Everybody Eats. Nice. Johnny and Marcel opened up their new business to us to be a hub for the conversation. And we threw a block party in August of 2021. You know, more people were outside, and it was phenomenal.
So will there be a new conversation this year now that, you know, this week we've learned that there's going to, you know, our Portland mayor Wheeler is not going to run for re-election. So we'll have a new mayor.
Yeah.
And also there's a change with the joint Office of Homeless Services, is that right?
Yep.
So how do you think that's going to affect things? Do you think it will at all?
It goes beyond that, too. We're also going to have new commissioners, too, so it's going to be a total shakeup.
Yeah, it already has been. I just got an email as I'm sitting here talking with y'all, which is really discouraging and disappointed from, like, all of the work that has been done and, like, what we have acquired to, you know, really to, like, have Afro Village and provide these services. We need the funding to be able to do it. So if we're getting, if we're, like, putting our whole, our heart and soul into proposals, but still continue to get denied. We've been like everything related to housing, to that initiative, which that's what the city and these offices say that they want, we're getting denied. So this is like the third, like the fourth one in this last year. That's really disheartening to me. So it's like with the all of this stuff happening, I'm curious of who are these folks on the other side of the review of these proposals that we're putting in, and who's in like, and when it, the outcome, who gets the money, and what are the, you know, the outputs.
I mean, that's another huge thing that you're getting at too, is like the amount of money that hasn't even been put, like, distributed by the Joint Office of Homeless Services, $100,000. You got the tobacco tax. I didn't remember how much you said was there, but we also have the cannabis tax. There's another $25 million.
Yeah.
Right. And so aren't most of the funds and taxes collected from those programs supposed to be turned towards things to help revitalize communities and provide safety nets, basically welfare programs that help people get back on their feet, that get them housed, that get them jobs.
But there's a lot of favoritism. There's a lot of favoritism in this city. And these folks, you know, they want to look good. There's a facade. There's definitely that. I'm not saying that some of these organizations, when we go back and we look at who's been funded, it's who they feel is going to do the work. There are quote unquote doing the work or have something, but it's usually connected to a political party mm-hmm. or individual to say, oh, I feel that this can happen. Again, I've interviewed y'all can Google my name or the project. And like, this is going on before even a pandemic. This is like almost 5 years. So get in the train. Yeah, like that's a novelist. Like, let's get this train and do something cool. But it's not, it doesn't have the backing behind a like policy or funding to really make, because once we do something like that, it's going to be operationals, keeping it safe, keeping it going, these services that we're going to provide, who's going to man it. So like all of that, or woman it, person it, human it, you know, for us to have that safety place for our community. And with the trajectory and the change in the community, it doesn't feel as safe that it won't be vandalized or stolen or anything like that. So it's like we're, and it's no one's fault, but there is some madness to what's happening.
So you're saying the change in leadership, the shakeup that's coming here in Portland, right, will possibly drive some new changes for these programs and push them forward? You think that's possible?
I still think that would be veritable, in my opinion, because it depends on who gets into office.
Yeah.
And then you were also talking about the funding, and those positions aren't always the people who are on councils and committees that approve stuff are not always people that get elected. That's someone that applies for a job and gets hired. Mm-hmm. And so what's the process there? How does the vetting occur? And what sort of community perspective are they bringing to the table to make those decisions? Are they making decisions for low-income people but have never lived in the low-income life? Or had maybe a brief, a few years where a struggle that has helped inform them.
There's so many different, you know, everyone has their own story and situation. Corey and I were talking before about this, an awesome idea around a collective for artist residency, you know, happened many years ago. Well, then we also are dealing with like property management companies. We also are dealing with like the application of entering into housing, right? Or a situation where a lot of things have not been reformed since the 80s or 90s.
Yep.
And then it's who also is running these property management companies are sometimes not just a family business. They're like banks. They're big.
Yeah, yeah.
They're a much bigger entity.
They're a much bigger entity.
And they're so far off. They're not located, not even in the States sometimes, yeah. Not even on the West Coast.
And they're also getting like, there's so much money for homelessness from like the time that I came into Portland. My rent was paid for 1 year and a little bit over, and but I was actively participating in the events that was presented to me. Now that's another thing we need to get more people to be engaged, because our workforce is very fragile. You know, so there's a top bottom. It's like, what is that? Like our restaurant industry is lacking of service. Like everything is just like, we lost Walmart. Like F big corporations, but that is where local people, you know, my mom depended on that when she's on a fixed income.
Yeah, the affordable places.
The affordable places to be able to go get food or your goods or something that's just going to give you joy.
And the pandemic wiped out a lot of the very small community-based organizations and places that were actually expressly dedicated towards, you know, helping keep food deserts from forming within the city. And,
And that also then goes to affects the taxes that are being pulled in by the city.
I just read
businesses that pay taxes will help fund some of the programs or provide some of that funding. And that shifted around a bit because who is paying for that now?
So I just read an article like a couple hours ago, you know, and so we lost Joanne Hardesty, right? That was in position. Commissioner Rubio, like things changed. So what I'm seeing mostly in this summer and this last year is Commissioner Rubio.
Yeah.
The only female identifying folk on a city council. She's everywhere, right? But I think that everywhere can be very detrimental because you want to please everyone in every situation, and it's not possible. But the bureaus that she oversees are some very powerful entities in our city and business. I mean, like she's housing, Prosper Portland. So like how our city is ran, the article states Wheeler and Rubio partners to pass business incentive tax credit to revitalize Portland's central city. Right. That's been out since today's date at 3:42 p.m. The incentives and this whole movement back to having folks come back downtown, that's not going to happen. And the people, like, it's just not going to happen in the way that they think that it's going to happen.
So you think it's going to be a whole different look downtown? It's going to be a new landscape that we've never seen before here in Portland.
Yeah, and folks who have the money to go up against, like, the Ritz Carlton, right, that Wheeler also stamped on since he's been in office, and that took away food carts and small businesses at the time. And what they did was... and this is like me reading these articles, and that's one of the problems. The thing we have, we're not reading, we're not connecting the dots. So like, I'm going to make sense, right? Go back to Columbia Sportswear. This is all under the watch of Wheeler. Oh, the business. We're going to protect the businesses. They're wanting to protect but these larger corporations at the time, not the small businesses are going to be really that's going to benefit from it. It's the bigger folks like Columbia. And they say, hey, you know what? We'll take some taxes and we'll give it to for what's going on. They've utilized our tourism taxes. The taxes of something like this is not going to benefit locally. It's going to benefit people who are prying on coming to us because they got the money and they're going to say, we're going to buy this building and revitalize Portland, where they've never stepped a foot in Portland or really know what's happening with Portland right now.
Yep.
So that it's for a disaster in a sense of like not gentrification, because we've already experienced that. It's greed. So with the Ritz-Carlton, what I
Would you say it's like economic gentrification of the area?
Uh-huh. I like that. It's so much it is economic because it says, hey, we're going to provide jobs. But if our folks are not stable housing-wise and their health is not of...
I mean, some people will spend all of that money, you know, traveling in and out of town to the job. So the money that you're making looks good on paper, but when you look at the cost of things... You're literally only getting paid to go to and from work.
Yeah.
And you can't really afford basic necessities. Anything goes wrong. Yep. Your hours gets cut. Yep. You get sick.
Yep.
Somebody else gets you sick against, you know, you can't control that. It's going to change things.
And so they think that, I haven't read all of it, but from my understanding with taxes, it's like, okay, the Opportunity Zone. Have y'all heard about the Opportunity Zone?
Yes.
So Opportunity Zone was a tax incentive that Trump, you know, put in place where if the areas were neglected, yada, 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 right? So we have a bunch of those areas in our city and in downtown.
And it's just rebranding of the business improvement districts.
Yep. Which was another president, right? Obama had his one, which was the Promise Zone. You go back and you look at like these tax or these incentive for development, it pushes people out who don't have the money. Or even if you have the money, you may not know all the ways to play in the game because it's all the monopoly. So they're just monopolizing on what's happening. And while they're dumping the dope in the neighborhood and in the community and openly allowing them to be like, this is what's happening in Portland. While the Ritz, they said, listen, they paid $700 million to build that building and maybe even more. They're willing because changed.
Which building?
The Ritz-Carlton.
Mm-hmm. The Ritz-Carlton.
That opens up next month.
That's right.
That have condos or apartments, y'all, for $1.4 million.
In downtown Portland.
In downtown Portland. On 12th and Taylor.
Yeah. It's sort of, to me, that sort of seems like it suggests who they want to be living in this town. And it isn't the people who are already here.
Yes.
And who have historically been able to afford it because... Yes. So I that know pushes... it's not affordable here anymore very much.
So absolutely. I've actually been tracking this, and mm-hmm. there's one in name that actually comes up when you look into this very, very deeply, and it's Andrew Hohen. He mm-hmm. is head of the Portland Business Alliance, which just changed their names to like Portland Commerce mm-hmm. or something.
They're good for that, right?
And then he actually came from Brooklyn, mm-hmm. New York, and was in charge of one of the Chamber of Commerce over there.
Mm.
So like the gentrification that you're seeing in New York and Brooklyn and all that area,
mm-hmm.
it looks very reminiscent of what you're seeing in the Pearl District
mm-hmm.
right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's spreading throughout the city.
And our government, local government, they're so thirsty. They're so like, yes, come. Like there's a couple new slogans, right? What's the new one at Wyden and Kinney? Portland is what you make it.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that.
That's new. It came out new. Last week.
That just is last week. New.
I think it's Portland what you make, and they're really happy about this because it's like, just do something what we make it, right? It
tells, to me, it sounds like if you come here to live, you're one of the big money people that can spend $1 million
yep.
on one of the new renovated downtown apartments. I'm being told that I can make this town whatever I want it to be to suit my interests. And
yep.
it's not about this town. It's all about me.
Yep.
And I don't have to adapt to this town. I'm going to make this town shape around
yes.
my needs. That's the impression yeah. that gives.
But that's also been happening over these last 5 to 10 years. And then being in a pandemic, you know, folks could jump on. They don't have to be in Portland or anywhere. None of us in person, right? You jump on a Zoom call. When the cannabis, and you're referring to the cannabis taxes at a state level, there was a group of folks that, you know, started to convene. I was already connected with some cannabis, and there was like 100-something people. It added up to like 150 people on these calls, and some folks were from Chicago. They were people of color, but they were not the people that were living here. They yeah. hired people from different states that, again, they think, the way I look at it, they think that we are some goofy ass slow people that don't know what's going on, and they're gonna tell us again what they want it to be, and it's just a mess. It's like, I love art. We're here for the arts. But let's just throw a bunch of stuff on the wall and just see what happens with it.
Yeah.
So with the Ritz, they decided that they made a negotiation. There's a negotiation of some policy that got changed for the opportunity zone, but also exclusionary zoning, that what they could do, they lease, they're leasing that space for from the city through the opportunity zone for 75 years. That's the whole lifetime of somebody live, right? Like, we're going to lease it for 75 years and they get the tax bracket. But what they were, they agreed to do, I think there's like 123 openings, but 26 of those would be like affordable housing or like subsidized housing. They refused. They said, you know what? We don't want to do that. We just are going to, it's too much state of the art. What we're going to do is we'll pay the fine, the fee of $7.76 million, and it'll go back to the city, Portland Housing Bureau, for affordable housing. That makes no sense. Yeah. Why we can't live where we want to live.
Wow, it sounds like there's a lot that we have covered already that is rather confusing. There's a lot going on in Portland.
Yes.
There's a lot going on in Portland right now.
Especially when you take a break.
Right? Well, I know we have to share the studio with some other volunteers.
Yes.
So I wanted to say thank you again. And just to quickly recap, you are Q.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. And Laquita Lamford. Yep.
Right.
Afro Village PDX. Thank y'all for having me. I know I said a lot because I've had a lot to say.
We could go on, I'm sure.
Yeah,
for
and
much
whatever
longer.
Makes sense to like bring to the table, bring it doesn't have to be all of that. It was just nice being able to release that and be able to like make sense of like where we were, where we're at, and what we where we're going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, this was a great check-in. We'd love to maybe see what's going on, and I'll just be curious myself about how the project develops, and especially the trains.
Yeah,
definitely. I'm definitely.
We're having
curious.
A celebration tomorrow for our third year, at our office space. So I'm excited about that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where's the office space?
So part of it we have office space in Old Town. I'm at 115 Northwest First Avenue, which is a private space that we're subleasing. But yeah, folks know how to get a hold of me, you know, then I can show you all the space.
Nice.
Yeah, that's where we're at right now. We have a home for now.
Cool. Well, I thank you so much for being on, and we hope to talk to you in the future, of course, when you got more stuff to share.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot.
That's a
I'm not going to let the generation that comes after me be dumb, deaf, and blind.
KBOO Portland.